Have you been wondering what is really going on with our U.S. and world economy? Would you like to hear more from an expert? On today's Focus on the Community, my special guest is economist Morton Marcus. Morton is the former director of the Indiana Business Research Center at Indiana University's Kelly School of Business. He writes a weekly column titled Eye on the Pie, which is featured in many Midwestern newspapers. Morton frequently employs satire or conversations with fictitious characters to make his point. Morton, welcome
fictitious?
To...
Fictitious? Now, just hold on a moment. Fictitious? These people exist in my mind.
Well that's
You're
fair.
You're telling me that I'm fictitious also?
Well, that's just...
That's really a problem.
And see, there's that nice sense of humor coming out too, Morton, and we always appreciate that. But tell me, my friend, a little more background on your education, because so you've got a pretty good background when it came to your education before you went to the Kelly School of Business.
Right. I was very fortunate. At age 15, I was selected to go to the University of Chicago. And it turned out as I was one of those who was really too young to do that. And so by the middle of my second year at the University of Chicago, they advised me to leave, which was probably a good idea. Then I went to work downtown Chicago and ultimately enrolled at Roosevelt University downtown Chicago. And I really got a good education at Roosevelt. Got interested in economics, and one of my economics professors suggested that I apply for a graduate assistantship at Washington University in St. Louis, which I did, and I got accepted. I was told by the faculty advisor as I got there that I was basically a marginal student. But what he meant by that was they had offered the position to somebody else who turned it down. And so they went down the list until they got to me. I got a master's degree at Washington University and then went on to UCLA for a doctorate. And I passed all my exams on the doctorate. So I just had to write a thesis, a PhD thesis, which I never did. But I did pass the exams. And that is a remarkable feat because there were 21 of us who were in the room for those exams. Only 7 of us passed. I was number 6. Now, that has a very important element to it. Am I 6 out of 7 or am I 6 out of 21? I was interviewing for a job as I was leaving UCLA, and I went to University of Colorado in Boulder, which would have been a very nice place to work. And I was talking to the chairman of the economics department there. And he said, well, Mr. Marcus, I see you are a marginal student at UCLA. And I tried to explain to him that I was 6 out of 21, not 6, just 6 out of 7. But he thought of me as a marginal student, and I ended up saying, well, it just proves that the market works. Marginal students will interview at marginal institutions. He didn't like that particularly, but I have a history of telling people truthful things that they find insulting.
Well, I get that, and I'm probably share that common trait at times, because sometimes you just want the truth, and even though sometimes the truth seems to offend, especially these days. But as you know, Morton, Americans are really worried about the economy. They're seeing higher prices across the board, record inflation, record high fuel prices, and little action by our government. How did we get here, and who is truly responsible, and most importantly, how do we make things better?
Well, that's a very, very difficult question. Inflation generally begins with some act by somebody, and in this case, it was the same as what some of your listeners will remember. Back in 1972, the OPEC group, angry at the United States and the West in general, raised petroleum prices. And what happened then is we got inflation in 1973 and went into a slight recession, which was not a major event, but it began with OPEC. Well, this particular increase in prices, this inflationary period, starts really with COVID. What happened with COVID was that the federal government sent money to virtually every household in the country. Well, that was a nice thing to do. The purpose of that was to get people to spend the money so that we'd keep people employed throughout the country. And that isn't what happened. What happened is that many people left their jobs because of COVID. And at the same time, we did not have people spending the money because many, many, in fact, I would say the vast majority of households, except for the very, very poor in our country, didn't need the money. They used the money to pay down their loans. Wonderful thing to do, but that left them a lot of the money in the banks. And with low interest rates, the banks weren't particularly interested in lending the money. And so here you have an economy where people aren't working because of illness. The banks aren't lending money because people are not going out to buy things, but they did start to buy things that they didn't have to actually go to. They bought stocks. They bought Bitcoin. They actually bought houses. And because they had more money now, they began, and lower debt, they began to move up in the world. Bigger TV sets. I don't know if you remember how big TV sets were and how big they got, the actual TV sets themselves, but also TV sales. You know, our house now has bigger TVs than we had before. Did we need them? No, but we had the money for them. And we had spent down our debt. So we were in a position to buy bigger TVs. And that's what people did. They bought things. A lot of those things they bought through Amazon and through others who were delivered to them. So what did Amazon do? They went out and bought or built space, warehousing space. Now we come to the, this is where COVID came in. We've got a lot more money. Consumers are not spending that money as intended to keep people employed as much as they're spending it on the stock market. They're increasing their savings, and the stock market keeps going up because the money keeps going in. We got to a situation where then we get the invasion of our friends from Russia invading our friends from the Ukraine. And that just set off a tremendous problem in the petroleum industry because Russia is a big producer of petroleum and a big producer of natural gas. And when there was a limitation on the amount of natural gas and on petroleum in the markets, prices go up. Now, that's not just prices in the United States, that's prices worldwide. Also, the Ukraine, and most of us didn't know this, the Ukraine is one of the major suppliers of food in the world.
Yep.
We didn't know that. We didn't know that this was really the breadbasket of the world because of the grains that they produce. Well, Russia invading, and particularly Russia blocking off the ports where the ships would come to take the grain to the rest of the world, sent food prices up. So here we have the conditions of people doing a lot of buying, now coming out of COVID, wanting to buy even more, and we don't have enough people driving trucks. We don't have enough warehousing space. All these things are moving the economy up and up, and it hits a wall. It hits the wall that the Ukraine war basically gives us. Now, so what happens when petroleum prices go up? Well, petroleum is vitally important, and natural gas is vitally important for producing almost anything that you can think of. Farmers need the petroleum. The natural gas is needed by the restaurants. You know, it just hits everywhere you can think. Wherever you're going to buy, there's some element of petroleum or there's some element of natural gas.
So let me
ask. Did the president do this?
Yeah.
No. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, that's my next question, because there are a lot of people think that as soon as Joe Biden was inaugurated, he made a few executive decisions, including canceling the Keystone Pipeline and also apparently some executive decisions on whether or not they could actually drill in certain protected areas. What kind of an effect has the Biden energy policies had on $5 gas right now, in your opinion?
Maybe a penny.
Really?
Maybe a penny.
Really?
No, this is not an inflation caused by anything that was done by the administration. Not really the Trump administration and not really the Biden administration. We were getting along just fine, with some upward pressure on prices, but nothing of any consequence. Until really the Ukrainian war hit, we have not been running this inflation for even a year. It's just become news recently, and it's going to stay there until that war is settled. This is a very serious world event because, when, for example, Mussolini went into Ethiopia, just before World War II, that didn't disrupt the world because Ethiopia wasn't producing anything that was really vital to the rest of the world. When Germany went into Poland, yes, there was a war, but it didn't cause inflation in the sense that we're experiencing it now, for the simple reason that Poland wasn't a big producer of anything. But Ukraine, although we Americans never thought about it, and I admit I'm one of them, I never thought about Ukraine as being a significant economic player in the world, and I never realized how important Russian oil and gas were. These are places of vital importance to key markets, the energy market and the food market. And where have we gotten inflation? Basically in energy and food. And that counts for about 40%, and maybe a little bit more, 45% of the inflation that we have experienced.
And what's your
that is not the action of the federal government.
And what's your professional opinion of the following? Why did Putin invade Ukraine to begin with? Why would he cause all this chaos in that part of
that's
the globe?
That's not a question for an economist. As a citizen of the United States, and I like to think of myself as an informed citizen, the only reason that Putin did this is he thought he could get away with it.
Yeah.
This is sort of like asking, why did Trump go around saying that the election was fixed, that he actually won? He thought he could get away with it. And Putin thought that his army, his military, was so good that he could just go in and scare the Ukrainians into submission. And that's why he massed all that equipment and all those troops on the border, threatening invasion. And then when the Ukrainians didn't give up under the threat, he actually went in because he thought that he had the superior force, and in a week or so, he could take the capital and he would just impose his will. Well, He couldn't. He learned something that the rest of us learned, and that is the Ukraine is vitally important to the world, and on top of that, the Ukrainians don't like the Russians, even though many people in the Ukraine have Russian backgrounds. But it's sort of like, you know, if you think about colonial America, for a long time we had people who did not like England at all. Even after we broke off from England, and that's exactly what's going on with Ukraine. A lot of the people have their origins in Russia. They speak the Russian language, but they're not Russian in the sense of their political allegiance. They are Ukrainians. And we had the same thing here in the United States. Many of us were British, and we resented what the Brits were doing to us, so we broke off. Well, that's really how we got an independent Ukraine, and the British were unable to suppress us, and the Russians are unable to suppress the Ukrainians.
So what does a consumer do with all this inflation? I mean, what would you advise the average person to do to try to weather this horrible economic storm that we're in?
Well, first of all, it's only horrible to the very poor. If you think about it, you and I can cut back on some of our spending. And it's our spending that helps fuel it. I go to the gas station and there are long lines there. Why are there long lines? Because the people are filling up more often. I do it myself. It's wrong. Do you remember when the COVID business started? There was suddenly a shortage of toilet paper.
Right.
Well, how did we get a shortage of toilet paper? It's because you and I and all the other people that we know went out and bought toilet paper.
Yeah, we're stocking
now
up.
Now we're storing. Yeah, we're stocking up in case there's a shortage. Well, we created the shortage. We created the shortage. It wasn't the toilet paper manufacturers. It wasn't the truck drivers. It wasn't the merchants who were selling the toilet paper. We created the shortage. And we're getting the same thing, and the prices of toilet paper, of course, went up. We're doing the same thing with gasoline.
Yeah,
we are now maintaining the inventory. We're keeping in our gas tanks gas we don't need.
Well, and a lot of people were cooped up for nearly 2 years with the COVID pandemic, and it just seems to me if people have got the cash, they want to go somewhere. They're traveling. I went to Florida in late March. I've never seen both Interstate 65 and 75 so full of vehicles and semis.
Yes, I can understand that. But a lot of that is using gasoline in a way. But people feel that they have to maintain their standard of living. Well, their standard of living right now is too high for the prices that we have to pay. So what we're doing is we're just adding to inflation.
So
we're going out, we're spending the money. The governor of Indiana wants to send $225 to each taxpayer. Well, that's lunatic. What are they going to do with the money? They're going to spend it.
Yep, they're going to buy
it. You and I are going to spend that money, and you and I don't need that money. $225 for you or $450 for your family, that means something to people who are really poor. But the rest of us, spreading that money over the course of the year, we're not talking about a lot of money. We're talking about, $20 a month?
Yeah.
Which is $5 a week. And that's a lot of money that's going to change our soften inflation for us? No, that money hitting the market is not going to do very much for the market except make certain things more expensive. Because we will just be feeding inflation. We'll be going out and buying things. We may go out and stock up toilet paper again.
We might. We're talking with economist Morton Marcus, and in our remaining few minutes, Morton, I guess the big question now is, are we headed to a recession in your view?
In a way, we're already seeing a slowdown. Amazon, as I mentioned, went out and built or rented a lot of storage space so they could make faster deliveries to your house and to my house. Amazon now is trying to cut back on the warehousing space they have. That's the kind of thing that one does when the economy is slowing down. And you could say, well, that's the beginning of a recession. It may or may not be. A slowing down in the economy is often part of a recession, but it's not necessarily a situation where we're going to get a lot of unemployment. And it's true, if Amazon lays off some workers, there'll be some unemployment, but the employment market is so hot right now that that's something we can tolerate. We're seeing other evidence of a slowdown in the economy. But if you've been going too fast, slowing down isn't a bad idea at all.
But
the trick is, in slowing down, don't slam on the brakes.
Right. And what do you think about, like, the president got a win with his infrastructure bill, and now these governments all across the country are laying out all these plans to spend that money? Is that going to help or hurt at this point, even though we definitely...
Spending that money will only be more difficult because it will cost them more because they will be pushing inflation. Wise governments, just like wise households, will hold back on buying things. How can we tell households? How can you tell your listeners that one of the things they should be doing is not spending quite as much? Now, you've got advertisers who don't want to hear that message being sent out over your radio station.
Exactly.
And that's part of the problem. People want to see their level of living sustained at a very high level. I listen to my friends, and they've got so many streaming channels on their TV. You know, did you see this on Netflix? Did you see this on Amazon Prime? Did you know what I saw on Hulu, or I saw on Apple Plus or HBO or Showtime? And there's all these different services that are out there. And how many of these do we really need? What if you cut back on $10 here and $10 there on things that you really don't need as a way of saying, I'm not going to contribute to inflation. I'm not going to do that.
Let's take it a step further then. What if the average American right now, let's say for the next 3 months, would spend 50% less on gasoline? What would that do to gasoline prices 3 months from now, in your opinion?
In my opinion, it would certainly slow down. Certainly slow down the rise in prices we're seeing at the pump. And I believe some of that is already happening. I think that American consumers are recognizing that they've been buying too much gasoline.
And the domestic...
And we have seen prices falling.
And the domestic exporting now of American oil seems to be picking up steam. It seems like we're making up for some of that loss in Ukraine, for instance, and that's probably not helping the cost either, is it?
Well, that's right. We have the ability to produce more, but failure to open up the Arctic to drilling, or the idea of the pipeline, you know, Canada is not producing as much of the petroleum that they used to produce. There are lots of people who are withdrawing. There are companies that are selling the land that they have in Canada for oil production. Why are they selling at this time? Because the market doesn't really need it. It's expensive. It's very expensive petroleum. And so the Keystone Pipeline really would not be necessary at all if what's going on in Canada continues. We've got lots of situations in this world. The world is very complex, and I hate to tell you this, but there's billions of people all over the world who are making decisions today that affect our daily lives. And we have to see what we do that affects our lives as well. And one of the things we do in America is we have a very rich country. I'm not just talking about having very rich people, but you and I, if you compare what we have to what our parents have had, you know, we're tremendously rich.
Yep, I get
it. My parents never lived as well as I'm living.
Or if people haven't traveled abroad, I've been to Jamaica several times, and that's what looks like a poor country to me, of course.
Places like that. We don't understand how many poor people we have in Indiana. You know, I've traveled this entire state for well over 50 years now, and we are a state that has lots of poor people, but it's only the poor people who are suffering from inflation. The rest of us are contributing to it, and we could cut back. We don't have to have all of the, if you will, the spices. You know, if my wife runs out of a spice, or even the jar gets low, she goes out and buys another one right away.
Yeah, I got about
maintain inventory. I got
about a minute left, but I want to get your take on the fall elections. As you know, historically, when one party's in control after an election, it seems like, you know, the opposing party makes gains. And there's a lot of people that think that the House is going to quickly go back to the Republicans, and the Senate could even go to the Republicans in November. Do you think that's possible? And even if it did, what's that effect going to be on the economy, in your view?
Well, quite honestly, it depends on which Republicans it goes back to. We have Republicans who have withdrawn from being Republicans. I have so many Republican friends who just shrank away from being called Republicans or thinking of themselves as Republicans. They didn't go and vote Democrat because they're lifelong Republicans. But what has happened is that the Republican Party has been taken over by a lot of people who are deluded, just as we had a president who was deluded. And it's important that they recognize that they've been told lies for so many years. The Republicans who are running right now, which ones are the ones that are deluded, and which ones are the ones that want to go back to the kind of Republican Party that we had with Richard Lugar, that we had with so many distinguished Republican governors, Bob Orr, for example, and John Mutz. These people are represented what the Republican Party in Indiana really meant, and that is sensible, reasonable, fact-based Republicans. And what we've got now out there are people who are following fantasy.
Well, Morton, I think we're going to have to wrap it up there, but always appreciate your insights, and thank you for taking time this weekend to talk about where we're at with the economy, and we'll definitely have this conversation again later this year.
Look forward to it. Thanks so much.
All right. Morton Marcus, everybody, an economist, and he lives in Indianapolis, and we do appreciate his feedback today on Focus on the Community. It's produced by the DLC Media News Center. This show is broadcast Saturday mornings at 6 on 104.9 WAXI, 7 a.m. on WAMB, AM 1130, 106.9 and 99.5, Sundays at 6 a.m. on 105.5 WVIG, and 7 a.m. on 92.7 WFNB. For a download of this show and other past programs, visit any one of our radio station websites. I'm Dave Crooks. Thanks for listening.